Percy'd been scheduled to make the flight with him. They'd flipped a coin last night for the left-hand seat and she'd won, then given him one of her trademark victory grins. But then she'd wakened at 3 a.m. with a blinding migraine, which had stayed with her all day. After a few phone calls, they'd found a substitute co-pilot, and Percy'd taken a Fiornal and gone back to bed. A migraine was the only malady that would ground her. Lanky Edward Carney, 45 years old and still wearing a military hairstyle, cocked his head as he listened to the phone ringing miles away. Their answering machine clicked on, and he returned the phone to the cradle, mildly concerned. In the office of Hudson Air Charters, on the grounds of Mamaroneck Regional Airport in Westchester, a cake awaited. Prim and assembled Sally Ann, smelling like the perfume department at Macy's, had baked it herself to commemorate the company's new contract. Ed Carney ate a few bites of cake and talked about tonight's flight with Ron Talbot, whose massive belly suggested he loved cake, though in fact he survived mostly on cigarettes and coffee. Talbot wore the dual hats of operations and business manager, and he worried out loud if the shipment would be on time, if the fuel usage for the flight had been calculated correctly, if they'd priced the job right. Carney handed him the remains of his cake and told him to relax. He thought again about Percy and stepped away into his office, picked up the phone. Still, no answer at their townhouse. Now concern became worry. He slapped the receiver down, thought about calling a neighbor to check up on her. But then the large white truck pulled up in front of the hangar next to the office, and it was time to go to work. 6 p.m. Talbot gave Carney a dozen documents to sign just as young Tim Randolph arrived, wearing a dark suit, white shirt, and a narrow black tie. Ed Carney wanted to be gone, away from the cake, away from the festivities, away from the ground. And soon he was, sailing 3 miles above the earth, piloting a Lear 35A, the finest private jet ever made, clear of markings or insignia except for its N registration number, polished silver, sleek as a pike. It was 723 miles to O'Hare, and they covered that distance in less than 2 hours. Air Traffic Control's Chicago Center politely asked them to descend to 14,000 feet, then handed them off to Chicago Approach Control. 10 minutes later, a pleasant, staticky voice came over the radio. Niner Charlie Juliet heading 090 over the numbers downwind for 27L. Tim spoke into his headset mic. 090, 9 Charlie Juliet. Carney glanced up at the bright points of constellations in the stunning gunmetal sky and thought, "Look, Percy, it's all the stars of evening." And with that, he had what was the only unprofessional urge of perhaps his entire career. His concern for Percy arose like a fever. He needed desperately to speak to her. He glanced at his co-pilot. "Take the aircraft." The young man's hands took the yoke. The ATC voice crackled on the radio again. "Niner Charlie Juliet, descend to 4,000. Maintain heading." Tim's voice was calm. "Roger, Chicago. Niner Charlie Juliet, out of 8 for 4. Carney changed the frequency of his radio to make a Unicom call. When he got Talbot, he asked to be patched through the telephone to his home. He heard it start to ring, 700 miles away. "Come on, Percy. Pick up. Where are you? Please." 3 rings. "Where the hell is she? What's wrong?" The knot in his gut grew tighter. And then, at last, in his earphone, a sharp click. His wife's voice. "Hello?" He laughed out loud in relief. Carney started to speak, but before he could, the aircraft gave a huge jolt, so vicious that in a fraction of a second, the force of the explosion ripped the bulky headset from his ears, and the men were flung forward into the control panel. Shrapnel and sparks exploded around them. Stunned, Carney instinctively